Hey everybody, welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.com. Movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley, and happy 1989 week at F This Movie. Leading up to F This Movie Fest on March 3rd, celebrating the films of 1989, I should say, we are devoting
Saving Private Ryan.
An entire week. That was 98. We are devoting an entire
Shakespeare
week
love.
To 1989. And so for this week's very special pre-F This Movie Fest show, we are going to be counting down our favorite movies of 1989 and joined, as is tradition for our pre-F This Movie Fest episode, after what I would call too long of an absence. Please, please welcome back to the show my best friend, Doug.
Aw, hey man. Is it no surprise that the very first thing I say on a movie-related podcast is wrong information?
Factually inaccurate. Doug, it's been so long. It's like when you come back to your high school reunion and you're like, I remember this place, but it really feels like it's changed.
Yeah, it's like when you're at a stoplight and it goes from red to green. It's like, man, that light's really changed.
But it's like, I had some good times here.
It's like that time that the little guy was by the lockers and I stabbed him in the neck with a pen. This place has really changed.
Doug, how are you? Welcome back. Congratulations on the birth of your third child. You can chart the growth of your family by listening to this podcast. When we started out, you were about to be wed, and now you're three kids deep in this shit.
That's right. Thank you very much. Yes, my son was born. He is alive. In the other room, and everything's good. We're all very happy and very busy and tired, but I'm happy to be on the show, so thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here, and happy 1989 week to you.
Thank you. Happy 1999.
I can't believe I blew it just in the opening sentences. I am not a professional.
You know what I love about this week? That a gallon of gas is only 97 cents.
Oh, look at you with the 1989 factoids.
That's right. That's right. Well, you were only 12 years old. I was 44. And I remember these things. Like the USSR pulled out of Afghanistan. Can you think of anything else that has been pulled out of? Not me, because I have a third child.
In case you weren't aware, this Saturday, depending on when you're listening to this, March 3rd, 2018, we are having F This Movie Fest 7?
Yes.
Do I have that right? I stopped counting, which is the world's only all-Twitter film festival at noon Central Standard Time. We are going to begin watching five movies from the year 1989 and tweeting along with them using the hashtag FThisMovieFest. First, we will watch UHF. Then we're going to watch Tango and Cash. Then we're going to watch The Burbs. Then we're going to watch Roadhouse. And finally, we're going to watch The Batman. So I'm excited about this lineup. I think a lot of other people are excited about this lineup. If you've never participated, you're a crazy person, and you got to get in on this, even if it's just for one movie. You'll see how fun it is, and next year you'll be with us for the whole darn thing.
Yeah, it's great. It's great fun, and since I've moved away, it's been almost 4 years since I left Chicago. I'm still able to keep in touch with most of my friends via Twitter and
podcasting.
Via podcasting. This is how we stay in touch. This is life now. This is real living.
future of social networking, everyone.
I've got a correction. It's not F This Movie Fest 7. It's F This Movie Fest V2, VII.
Oh,
so that's different, I think.
That sounds fa-fa fancy.
Yes. I believe this is also the first podcast. I have not. We talked briefly before you press record. This, I believe, is the first podcast that I've been on since the summer.
Yeah.
Since the 400th show. So it's been 30 some odd episodes since I've been on. And I think this is the very first podcast in which, I don't know if you've said it yet. I don't think you've said it yet, in which you're now referring to the website as fthismovie.com. Because in my day, and if, by the way, I also want to explain, if people out there listening are like, who is Patrick talking to?
Oh, yeah.
It's a very good question. My name's Doug. I'm one of Patrick's oldest friends. Go back, in a time machine to 2010 and listen to pretty much every podcast that the show offered, and you'll hear me in abundance. The show is rough around the edges. I made lots of inappropriate jokes, especially in 2018. I'm sure they are very, very raw, awkward, offensive jokes, and I apologize for that when you go back. But go back and listen, because they're also hilarious.
Here's the thing. And I don't want to say this in like a mean way or make you feel bad, but I have been saying fthismovie.com for months.
Yeah, I know.
Literally months. By the way, I say literally now also. That's how long it's been since we talked.
Holy moly.
Yeah.
Man, the last 30 shows have changed you.
I've really changed. But like,
many things have changed.
But like, I remember this, you know? Like,
right. You know what's weird about this, though? It's like
I had some good times here.
No, it's like I'm looking at the microphone right now and it's like, I remember this, but it seems so much bigger, you know?
Yeah.
And you sit in your desk and it's like, man, this was huge. I used to keep my pencils here. This is where I colored. And now it's, oh, I could barely sit down is my point. Going back. It's hard to go back. By the way, I'm so upset about the Exxon Valdez spilling all that oil.
OMG, with the drop in the 89 knowledge. I love it.
10.8 million gallons of spilled oil. It's crazy. I hope that we figure that out in the future.
Yeah, no, thank goodness we solved that whole gas thing.
Right. Absolutely. Now we're just sending cars into space.
just because we can. Douglas.
Yes.
Have you seen anything good lately?
Oh, boy, have I? Let's see. Let's go back to August of 2017. Yep. First, there was Scary Movie Month. Let's go through all my Scary Movie Month movies.
Please.
And then... just fast forward that part. And then there was the Christmas celebration. Let's go with all my Christmas movies. And then the year end, my top 10 of 2017, all those movies that I saw we've talked about that off the air. I don't need to bring that up now.
No.
I mean, there's just been so many movies that I've seen. It's almost as if I don't have any children at all. I will mention, just because I know we want to get right to 1989, I want to mention two movies specifically. The first of which is something that I recently listened to an older episode of F This Movie with you and Mr. Adam Riske talking about Jackie Brown. Excellent, excellent podcast. Sincerely, I really enjoyed listening to it.
Thank you.
So I went back and watched Jackie Brown on Netflix because every day they're losing more and more movie titles and just populating it with more and more Netflix TV shows and Netflix movies.
For sure.
So I'm now kind of nervous about – there's a good library of Quentin Tarantino movies on Netflix right now I watched Jackie Brown, Kill Bill, Inglourious Basterds, and Half of Hateful Eight just because I own them, by the way, on Blu-ray, but I can't be bothered to walk to the shelf and put it in the I'm just like I'm kind of jonesing on that right now, just knowing that tomorrow it'll be Bright 2 and less Django. But I will say Jackie Brown, I agree, everything you and Adam said was awesome on that show. I do have one critique with the movie, and I want to get your take on it.
Okay.
As much as I think the movie is, when you're watching it, it's your favorite Quentin Tarantino movie, completely agree. The character development, the romance, the mood, everything is pitch perfect. I will say my one tiny minor critique is that I don't think it's a very good heist movie, or I think that there's like some the heist aspect of it. It's not like it's a bad heist movie at all. I think it's actually a good heist movie.
I'm almost positive you just said it's a bad heist movie.
That's not what I said. I think that's what Adam said on the Jackie Brown show. Go back and go back to the tapes.
Doesn't sound like the Adam I know.
That's Adam Thaz I'm talking about.
Oh, no, that definitely sounds like him.
He also loved the Green Lantern. I mean, let's be honest. But I feel like there's some – they gloss over some things and there's some hiccups. And I realize also in a lot of very complicated heist movies and the scenarios in which the heist takes place, when there's like three or four different right turns, that sometimes you kind of have to just go with it and not examine it too closely. I know in Ocean's 11, for example, there's a whole chunk at the very end where I'm just like, I don't understand what on earth just happened. There's like a warehouse that blew up and they're the FBI people. There's a disconnect there. And maybe it's because I'm not a very smart person. I'm sure that's what it is. but I feel like Jackie Brown is so, so great. But when I try and dig my teeth into the heist part of it and like when you kind of run it through your head, it's like really there's a lot of coincidences and a lot of things just happen that could very easily go a different way. That could not have been planned the way they went. Like when the bag is left in the dressing room and he just like walks in and she just lets him go. And it's like, it's just, there's certain things about it that are just like, I'll take this movie. It's one of the best Quentin Tarantino movies. It's an awesome movie. I love it so much. But the heist aspect of it, not crazy about.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're a monster. That's fine. I mean, that's fine.
No, no.
It's fine.
And my second movie.
Oh, yeah.
No, do you have any thoughts on that? Have you thought about the heist aspect of it? I'm waiting.
I like that it's a very small scale, and I believe most of those coincidences because I think they're rooted in just human behavior, and I think the characters are counting on that, which is why when she comes out of the dressing room, she's like, somebody left a bag full of towels or something, so that when he shows up, that idea has been seeded, and why would that woman have any reason to question him?
Yeah, I agree that the stakes are low, and I think you and Adam talked about that enough in a good way. You talked about that well enough, I should say, where you talk like it's $1 million and how like in most movies it's $1 billion or right. whatever. And that was enough. And I think that's a really interesting element of that part of the movie. But I don't know. There's just steps along the way. And that's just one small example. But there's other things where it's just kind of like, well, why did they? There's like two switches made. I don't know. I can't explain it right now, obviously. And this isn't a Jackie Brown podcast, but there's all these other things that are kind of happening because it's like clever. And I'm like, it doesn't make it better though. I don't know. That's my whole.
Mm.
But I agree that there's some human element, especially in 1997 when that movie came out. Right.
It was a different world where we were constantly letting people go into dressing rooms, but no questions asked.
Right. It was 8 years after the Berlin Wall came down, which mm-hmm. happened in 1989. I mean, it's there was pro-democracy rallies in Tiananmen Square mm-hmm. 8 years earlier.
What would some of like the hit shows have been 8 years prior to that dressing room fiasco?
Oh, fuck. Oh, shit. Let me just hold on. I didn't think you were going to ask me questions. It's on a piece of paper. Taylor Swift was born in 1989. You think, I mean, that's crazy. Right?
That is bananas. Do you think?
I mean,
And then that's so weird that then that's, she named her album 1989 also. Like, that is,
wait,
that's like freaky.
That's not in my notes, so I have to trust you on that.
Oh, please. If there's one thing I know, it's Queen Tay-Tay.
The next movie I'll talk about is a movie that we should be honestly talking about for the rest of the podcast. It's from 1980. It's Don Taylor's The Final Countdown, a movie that is not getting enough love in the world. It's a movie. It's a military movie that also has to do with time travel and World War II. You could see why it's easily on the top 10 list of all time for Doug Schultz. It's really just that good. Have you seen The Final Countdown?
I have never seen it. I'm aware of The Final Countdown. I've never seen The Final Countdown.
This is the USS Nimitz. Where the hell are we? Is the tagline on the poster. Because they go into a vortex very slowly, by the way, and then they find themselves in World War II with like Japanese Zeros flying around. And so much of the movie just is like, yes, I'm watching it. It's the dumbest movie. And I just can't. I love it so much. It's a great movie. It was on Amazon Prime for the longest time. And then they just randomly, it's not on Prime anymore. So I can't tell you to go watch it for free. But it's worth every penny of a rental, I would say.
I plan to check it out, you know, at some point. Maybe.
When we do, when it's at this movie fest, 1980.
Ooh, that might be a tough one. It's going to be a lot of like... Not even Kramer versus Kramer. I don't even have a go-to 1980 movie.
Raging Bull? Is that 1980?
I think it might be. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Ordinary People?
Yeah, right? Sure.
Well, anyway, The Final Countdown stars Kirk Douglas, Martin Sheen, and a bunch of other people from the 80s, like
naturally.
Charles Durning.
Any other younger celebrities' dads?
I'm sure Ron O'Neill is the father of someone.
Ron O'Neill is Superfly, you monster. Patrick Swayze Sr.?
Excuse me, my statement stands. I'm sure he's the father of somebody.
By the way, I'm looking up the top-rated shows of 1989, and they're essentially what you would expect. Cosby Show, Roseanne, Cheers, Different World. When we get down to number 9, Empty Nest. Empty Nest. And then
life goes on, and so do we.
Here's
just
where
how we do it is no mystery.
Here's where I feel like I have to call bullshit on. Maybe just ratings were scored so weirdly in 1989, because at number 13 there's a tie, Murder, She Wrote. a show we're all familiar with, even if we've never seen a single episode.
Oh, starring Paul McCartney.
Right, and died with a show called Chicken Soup. And I said, I was pretty pop culture savvy. Why do I have no memory of Chicken Soup? So I click on it, and it is a sitcom starring Jackie Mason and Lynn Redgrave that aired on ABC from September 12th to November 7th, 1989. So we're talking about a show that ran for about a month and a half and yet 13. Finishes in the top 20 with nearly an 18 share. And right below that is Grand, your joke show of choice.
That and Grace Under Fire are definitely two sitcoms that I refer to way too often.
Otherwise, Grand had Bonnie Hunt, one of my great celebrity crushes.
I feel like I'm not getting enough love for knowing the theme song to Empty Nest.
I apologize. Here's the thing. I didn't, and therefore I took your word for it.
Whatever. Whatever. There's one of his daughters is cute in that movie, in that TV show.
It was Christy McNichol, and who's the other one?
Yeah, Christy McNichol.
Dinah Manoff, right, from Grease 2. Wasn't she the other one?
Who can say?
Grease 2? Look how much I know about Empty Nest, having never seen an episode. I know Richard Mulligan was on it. That's the best I know.
Right. And Michelle Pfeiffer from Grease 2 is
it,
apparently.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And Maxwell Caulfield from Ghost Brigade.
She's a cool queen. She's going to throw all my joke movies out there, aren't you? Ghost Brigade. Corbin Burnson. L.A. Law's Corbin Burnson is the title character of a movie that's on cable TV.
Corbin Burnson from Major League, a film released in 1989. Roger Dorn, if you will.
Richard Dorn. He's a shortstop. He doesn't take the ball, though. And then when he does, he gets bruises all over. That might be.
I thought Tom Berenger was the shortstop.
No, Tom Berenger is the...
He's the catcher. What am I thinking?
He makes the league minimum.
That's right. man. Major League is awesome.
Yes.
I love that movie.
Speaking of sports, the Niners. How about those Niners? They beat the Bengals in Super Bowl XXII. It's either an L or an I. Mm-hmm, I'm not sure. Mm-hmm, it's because it's. I'm using a Calibri font. It's not. I mean, it's just in my head in 1989 because I'm an old man.
Printing on a dot matrix.
That's right. I had to tear off the sides and then I made a little thing with them. It was
also
fun.
The name of the Joan Rivers robot in Spaceballs, not released in 1989. Everyone, 1987, the theme of last year's F This Movie Fest.
You know, in 1989, your birthday was on a Wednesday, and my birthday was on a Saturday.
We're really learning a lot about each other and ourselves.
You should just stop recording right now. I mean, how on earth are we going to top the days of our birth?
I'll tell you what we've done. We've promoted the hell out of F This Movie Fest.
That's correct. With R.I.P. Lucille Banter. Ball, Mel Blanc, Betty Davis, Ted Bundy, and Ayatollah Khomeini.
Sorry, I just saw your tweet of the bear falling on the guy.
Welcome.
Anyway, anything besides the final countdown? Are we? Oh, sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
Time out. We are in the middle of a podcast, and you're so bored with the conversation. You're like, I'm gonna check out Twitter.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, for sure.
If only Toyota would release a luxury brand this year. Oh wait, they did. It's called the Lexus.
Anything besides the final countdown and all of Tarantino?
That's all I'll talk about now. How about you?
I've been trying to watch a few 1989 movies, what with it being 1989 week and all. I kicked things off with a little movie called Dream a Little Dream, which nice. I don't know exactly when it will run. It may be up already by the time this podcast comes out on Wednesday, or it may show up at the website later this week. But Stephanie Crawford wrote a long piece about Dream a Little Dream that's really good that everybody should read. It's weird because I watched it a lot as a kid and always felt like I shouldn't like it, even though I did. I was like, well, it's body swapping and the two Corys. And, you know, I recognize that this movie's not good, but I'm into it. I like the soundtrack and blah, blah, blah. I don't know. Watching it again as a grown-ass man, I realized that it is weirdly ambitious. I won't say all of it works, but it's trying to do way more than most body swap and Corey movies ever made. So I don't feel bad about liking it anymore.
Now you're like owning... I love Dream a Little Dream.
I'm into it, baby. I'm into it. I watched Earth Girls Are Easy, which is a very, very fun, silly movie slash musical. It's way more of a musical than I remember. Super colorful. Gina Davis, There Are No Words. Jeff Goldblum, very hot. Young Jim Carrey. Young Damon Wayans. Julie Brown, not the Wubba Wubba one, the other one. Just say Julie, Julie Brown. Really fun and in that way. And I think I said this, I wrote a thing about like a 48-hour marathon, and I think I compared it to Bill and Ted because both movies are about California culture and are about dumb characters, but in a very smart way.
Mm. I don't think I've ever seen Earth Girls Are Easy, and now I have to.
It's fun. Watch it just for Gina Davis.
Well, yeah.
My God.
That gif you sent me was pretty great. Sorry, the gif you sent me.
Yeah, right? I mean, who can say? Because it's 1989, and that hasn't been invented.
No, graphic interface formats are like, who's it? What? Right? Who? Me? Not me.
Graphic what's it? Who's?
That's right.
When's?
It's like, I don't know what a gif is, but I do know what a Game Boy is, which just came out in July.
I didn't realize Game Boy had been around for that long. I never had a Game Boy, or a Nintendo, or an Atari.
We get it. You were abused.
I waited 430 episodes to talk about it.
Oh, great. It's going to be one of those serious episodes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Doug.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I also watched The Toxic Avenger Part 3, The Last Temptation of Toxie.
And I thought Part 2 came out in 1989.
You know what? They both did. Because
really?
Yes, because they were supposed to be one movie. Lloyd Kaufman made the sequel and then was like, wait, this thing is 4 hours long and makes very little sense. I fucked up. What did I do? And then split it into two movies. And it doesn't, you can tell that it was split into two movies because it's a lot of like voiceover and just things sort of pasted together. It's like when you watch that alternate Anchorman cut.
Yeah.
But I've always had an affection for Toxic Avenger 2 and 3 because I feel like I watched those the most as a kid, not even the first one, because they were on USA Up all night and I recorded them onto a VHS and just watched them over and over again. And they weren't even that cut because as I was watching stuff, I was like, I remember all of this ridiculous violence and there's not really any sex, although Phoebe Legere plays his blind girlfriend Claire and she's my favorite of the Toxic Avenger girlfriend characters and she's amazing and worth watching the movie for alone because she's so great.
You're just like, I wish I had a blind girlfriend.
Yes.
Yes. And you watched it on USA Up all night.
I wish. I miss USA Up all night. I watched it on Blu-ray because you need to see it in high def.
So Troma, Lloyd Kaufman dismantled the movie into two pieces, much like how the South African Prime Minister de Klerk dismantled apartheid, I believe.
Wow.
Is that correct?
Wow.
I'm literally just asking. I'm just like trying to confirm. I'm trying to put myself into your shoes because I'm not as familiar with Toxic Avenger.
Sure, sure. Yeah,
So I'm just trying to like understand this from a societal context, if that makes sense.
Yeah. You know so much. When did Saving Private Ryan come out?
The 90s. It's the best movie of the year that it came out in.
I get it. Let's get to the main event here, Doug.
Okay.
Let's quit pussyfooting around, okay?
Yes.
I'm comfortable. I'm putting on my sweatpants.
Oh.
And I'm ready to get into it. Interesting. Very interesting. I like to wear my sweatpants when I talk about movies. So we're going to talk about our favorite movies of 1989. Now, this is a fascinating exercise to do.
Yes. Yes.
Many, many years removed, 30 years removed, right?
Yeah.
We've done it a couple of times and it's hard. Sometimes I think it's going to be easier because you've lived with movies for longer and therefore have a better sense of like what your favorite movies are from that time. I had a hard time with 1989, to be honest, because there's a lot of movies I've seen a bunch of times, but not necessarily movies that I would call like the 10 best movies.
You know, it's funny you say that because
everything I say is funny.
It's hilarious. Your face. Oh,
wow. Wow. Wait.
I know. I just got so angry.
I have a question. I have a question for you. I burnt?
Oh, you burnt. Wait, wait for the tweet. It's going to come right now. You could you could check your Twitter while I'm talking. I came to the same conclusion, but I had a different journey. I know that sounds so pretentious. My point simply is I am in the same boat as you in terms of like, I have a hard time making a top 10 list. Now, the reasons I feel like I had a hard time making a top 10 list is I'm actually not as familiar with this year as you are probably.
Well, didn't you spend most of 89 lined up for the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie in 1990?
You know me too well. By the way, my favorite Ninja Turtle, this speaks to so much of who I am, was Leonardo, which was the blue one who was like trying to get the other ones to calm down. He's like, guys, stop messing around. I have a blue headband and a blue belt, and I have long swords, which are cool, and I think that's what I responded to. But he was the one, like, Michelangelo was crazy. The other one was kind of nuts, too, that they were always partying. And Leonardo was like, guys, we really have to be quiet because our landlord is sleeping. And that's the one that I somehow respond to. What's wrong with me as a child is my point.
I like Buzzkill Turtle.
Right. No, but I think it speaks to that I'm a little younger than you, and I wasn't as into movies in 1989 because I was probably 11 or 10, 11. And I don't think I was I didn't have the access that you did.
What access did I have?
I'm saying even though you didn't have a Game Boy or a Nintendo or an Atari, your parents just let you leave the house whenever you wanted to.
Good
to
point.
Walk to a theater.
Yeah. And watch and that is true.
And like go to the library and pretty much rent or check out whatever movie you wanted to watch at the library. And you had, my point is you had not just the will and the sort of like built-in wiring to want to watch and love movies, but you had the means and the access to. I was a dumb kid. I just liked to like play stickball and kick the can and stuff in the street. I wasn't as into movies. I pretty much watched whatever my parents rented, which ended up being Poltergeist and scarring me for life. So I wasn't even into the movies necessarily, aside from like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids or stuff that was really geared towards children. Like even Little Mermaid, I feel like was too young for me. So I didn't get that, which was 1989. So I didn't really, I wasn't as invested in that. And I wasn't really, even Batman, I know when it came out, there was such a buzz around it. By the time I eventually saw it in probably early 1990, I was like, I didn't quite understand what the big deal was. I thought it was fun, but like, I mean, that was the summer movie to end all summer movies. So it's kind of like there was such a buildup and such a anticipation to watch it that when I finally did, I think it was inevitable that I was let down. But on top of that, I was a dumb 11-year-old. So, of course, I was going to be let down for two reasons. So my point simply is in building this top 10 list and looking at all the movies, I can acknowledge that there are like, this is an excellent movie. This is a really respectable movie. This is a really fun movie. This movie's ridiculous, but I love it. But it's hard to kind of put that into a codified list of like things that I think are the best of the year is my point.
Yeah.
And it's again, because I was so young and just not as plugged in. I think my, my awareness, my epiphany about movies, my waking up, if you will, happened probably in like 91 or 92 when I really kind of like started to be aware of the movies and going to the theater more often.
I would have pinpointed it at about halfway through the run of this podcast, like 2014, 2015.
That's when I woke up to movies.
That's when you were like, wait a second.
I was like, geez, Patrick's asking me to record another movie podcast. I better watch some movies. Well, let me subscribe to that magazine. What's it called? Entertainment Tonight.
Entertainment Tonight, the magazine. Yeah. My top 10 list is very much from the perspective of adult me looking back at the movies that came out in 1989. And I will fully admit there are a handful of critically acclaimed films from that year that I still have never seen and can't guarantee that I ever will. I think there are, I would say, two movies on this list, maybe three, that would have also been on 12-year-old Patrick's list.
Yeah, there's probably four or five on mine.
How many slots does Lethal Weapon 2 have?
It has just one, but it's definitely on there. I mean,
but it's definitely number one.
Right? No, it's not number one. It might be number two. No, it's not.
Hey, guess what? Your license to podcast has just been revoked.
Diplomatic immunity. Can't revoke my podcast. That's the best death in any action movie ever.
Ooh, nice accent. Where is that from? South Africa?
It's almost as if you dropped a shipping container on my head, metaphorically, about my just total whiffing.
Can the rest of this podcast just be Lethal Weapon 2 quotes?
Yes. Let me hold on. Just my Lethal Weapon 2 quote book.
Yeah.
Like, for example,
I've only ever seen the TV edit, which is why I'm always walking around going, "They fool you at the drive-thru."
I've only seen The Gods Must Be Crazy too, so that's number 1 through 7 on my top 10 list of 1989.
What is your first movie, goddammit?
You know, I had Gleaming the Cube up there, and then I realized I don't like this movie. I like Thrashin', and that came out in 1996.
Thrashin' is not great. That's the Josh Brolin one, right?
You're crazy. What other movie has a villain that has like air guitar and his friends watch him play air guitar and they just applaud when he's done playing air guitar? And at the very end of the movie, they all are skateboarding down a mountain, but they're not really skateboarding. They're kind of just like going just really fast, which is totally opposite the rest of the movie of how they were actually skateboarding. I actually do like Thrashin' a lot, but it's totally just because it, you know, is a nostalgic warm blanket.
Sure.
I don't honestly, Gleaming the Cube has always kind of been a punchline because the title of the movie is so ridiculous.
Right.
But I don't remember really anything about it aside from it's a young Christian Slater skateboarding. And I don't remember. So it's, my point is Gleaming the Cube is not on my list.
Okay.
My number 10 is Do the Right Thing.
Your number 10. Interesting. Okay.
That's right. Because when there's Major League in the mix, of course that's above Do the Right Thing.
It will appear higher on my list. Should we talk about it?
Tabled.
More tabled. Or table it? Are we doing?
Wait, should I?
We're doing traditional rules?
I meant my number 10 is
yes. Even for the 1989 show, please do the fake movie Troop, okay. Beverly Hills.
My number 9 is Iron Man.
We're not to number 9 yet. God damn it.
No, I'm just saying my number 9 is Iron Man. Actually, Tetsuo. I thought this was that's Robert Downey Jr., right? It says Iron Man on my list. Right? Robert Downey
Jr. So we'll talk about Do the Right Thing some more in a little bit. But I guess, why is it so low on your list?
Why is it so low? Another question from an optimistic person would be, why is it so high on your list? When there's literally hundreds of other movies that didn't make my list.
True. No, good point. I'm glad that it's on there at all.
Yeah. I mean, come on. I mean, do you want Driving Miss Daisy to be higher than this? Because it's not. It's lower than this.
I've never seen it. I've never seen it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, listen, I've never seen it. My number 10 is a movie that would have been on my 12-year-old list, and that is UHF.
Nice.
Which I know seems nonsensical to some of you. Not only will we be watching it as part of F This Movie Fest, but I genuinely think it's like one of the great comedies of the 1980s and way ahead of its time in the way that it dissects and reconstructs pop culture. I think it's really inventive and really funny, and I love Weird Al, so that helps. And it's got great music, and it's just the best. It's UHF.
It really is the best. And I think this speaks to, it's not on my list, but it's not because it's not the best. It speaks to more, again, what I talked about in terms of this year being kind of a blind spot, and specifically UHF. I remember watching it when I was a kid and laughing, but not getting it. You know what I mean? Like, I knew it was funny because there was things like the fire hose and Spatula City. And those are the things that an 11-year-old would respond to. And I watched it once with you as an adult. And also, like, my mind was open to how much funnier it is because it's a really clever movie in addition to just being silly and slapsticky. But it's still a movie that I just have not seen enough times to even know it beyond the sort of trailer in my head, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's great. I'm actually really looking forward to watching it because it's one of those things where it's like I haven't watched it except with you in probably like 2009 or something and when I was a kid. So I'm looking forward to watching it with fresh eyes. While also just furiously tweeting and masturbating.
Did you get new eyes?
They're like my Minority Report eyes.
I mean, I was looking at your eyes and I was like, man, those eyes have really changed. But, you know,
yeah,
we had some good times, me and those eyes.
That's right.
Some good times.
You can't.
But time moves on. You can't go back.
You can't go back to my eyes, but just be happy that you had my eyes to begin with.
I think UHF is going to play like gangbusters on Saturday.
I hope. So.
And early.
Whoa. It's this Saturday?
Yeah. Are you free? Do you have a thing? Okay. Yeah. Check your Filofax.
No, I'm good. Sorry.
Okay. Phew. It's one of the movies that the early buzz on Twitter seems to be that's the one that people are excited about. Like, random people who don't know what this is will respond to somebody else's tweet and be like, UHF, it's either that or The Burbs. Nobody's like, ooh, cool, Batman, or ooh, cool, Tango and Cash, which is the one I'm most excited to watch with everybody on Saturday. It's UHF and The Burbs.
Tango and Cash is definitely the one that I'm probably the most excited about. It's one of the newer ones to me that I have gone back to on my own several times recently and watched. So, yeah. So, anyway.
What's next for you?
So the Shocker isn't just a sex move. It's also my number 9. No. Shocker is not. Was Shocker featured? Is that the one where the guy comes through the TV?
Yes.
That was on when I wrote that hilarious column where they literally come. What was the theme? Oh my gosh, this is such a bad part of a podcast.
People walking out of TVs?
Yeah.
Your flickbait
like
one?
Characters in movies walking out of TVs and from Shocker. And just remember that like VHS cover box of the guy getting electrocuted.
Yeah.
Being so great.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
My number 9, and this is probably the douchiest entry on my list, is Roger and Me. But there's a reason I put it on my list. I haven't seen Roger and Me, the Michael Moore documentary, in a long time, but it really was the first documentary I saw years after 1989 that kind of opened my eyes to documentaries, that they weren't all just like school movies, if that makes sense, that a documentary could be informative and interesting and have an opinion and really open my eyes to something that I didn't even know existed. So I think Roger and Me is a great example of that. And it's also just like early young Michael Moore before he became this cartoon character of who he is. And I really remember in high school specifically watching it several times and really responding to it. And kind of, again, my introduction to documentaries.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, it might still be his best movie because it's sort of his purest movie. I recognize, again, that it is manipulated. And, you know, I'm not suggesting that, like, Michael Moore played 100% fair with the movie. But again, I've always kind of made the distinction between an actual documentary film and sort of an essay film, which is what I would argue Michael Moore does. I know that distinction is harder to make when he wins an Oscar for best documentary. But yeah, I think in a lot of ways, Roger and Me is still, I think, his best movie.
Yeah, there's a couple I like more. Well, I don't know. It's hard to say, right? Like, what are we examining, like our personal response to his documentaries or what the subject matter, what it's saying? I don't know. I mean, I think it's one of his best, if not his best, too. I agree.
It's like his like scruffiest, for lack of a better.
Sure.
I don't know. But yeah, it's good. I thought about putting it on my list, but then I was like, that would be so stupid to do.
Like what asshole would do that?
I would be embarrassed.
I see how it is. Huh. Let me just modify my list here and put what's your next movie?
Ooh, wait till you hear. it's a movie that I'm guessing will also be on your list and probably is the other movie that would have been on my 12-year-old list, which is Heathers.
Yeah, that's also on my list.
Okay.
Tabled.
Okay, we'll come back to it, but that is a movie that again when I saw
when you mean we'll come back to it, do you mean you're going to talk about it right now?
Yeah. Well, cuz okay, if it's higher on your list, you should get to say more about it, but like
no, that's okay.
I think it holds up. That's all I'll say.
I believe there's an entire podcast.
I believe there is. I believe
from 2014.
There is. So I guess let's do your number 8.
Okay, Wild Orchid gets a bad rap because people thinks it's this erotic film, and it is. And that's actually why it gets a good rap from me. And by rap, I mean like fap. And by fap, I mean bait. And by bait, I mean pull. And Wild Orchid is something I pull out of my collection every night. Just, I was like a Michael Scott. I didn't know where that was going when I started.
And yet.
And yet.
That was amazing the way you came
know,
together with that.
It's my improv training.
Yeah.
It died a little on the vine. Sorry about that. My number 8 is Tango and Cash.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, because it's a movie. That's it. It's just a movie. You introduced it to me in what, 2012, 2011?
Yeah, maybe 2011. I don't know. But I remember at the time, like, I couldn't believe that you hadn't seen it. Not in a mad way, but like, it was exciting that I was like, I get to show this to you. This is so great.
And it did. It had the best possible. It played the best possible way in your basement. It was the best possible experience, the best possible first time viewing ever. Yeah. It's such a fun, stupid, ridiculous, great movie that's bad in all the right ways and terrible in no ways and great. It's just really, really fun. But I remember, to your point, it wasn't like I was avoiding it. It was more just an ignorance and sort of conflating and confusing the title with other things. Like, I think I mentioned in previous podcasts that I would get, for the longest time, I got that confused with like Tequila Sunrise and like all these sort of like adult drama action movies that like had no interest to me. You know what I'm saying? Like, when you're between the ages of like, I don't know, 10 and 20, like, you don't want to watch like a thoughtful, you know, like erotic action suspense movie or whatever. And for whatever reason, I thought Tango and Cash was like that kind of movie. And you're like, oh no, it's so much more. And it is. And I'm so glad I saw it. So.
Yeah. I remember at the time I was like, oh, he must be confused about this movie because you kept asking me, which one's the dog?
Both coming out. In 1989, by the way. You know that Turner and Hooch and Canine both came out. Now, the question to you is, which came first, the chicken or the egg?
I would say Canine came first.
It did, April 28th.
Yeah.
And Turner and Hooch came out July 28th.
Canine is totally the ants in this situation.
I have not seen either movie.
Canine or Turner and Hooch?
I mean, no, I've seen them both, but I don't think I've seen K-9 since the 90s.
I don't think I've ever seen K-9, but I saw Turner and Hooch theatrically.
Well, yeah, it's Tom Hanks.
And not since.
And not since? Okay. Yeah, I don't think I've seen it probably since the mid-90s, and watching it then was just like, ironically, as a joke, and being like, this isn't so great.
I've seen Hooch's skeleton since then, when Tom Hanks brought it onto the Conan O'Brien show.
Such a funny bit. He brings Conan a gift.
It's an enormous dog skeleton.
Right.
And he Conan's says, like, it's Hooch.
It's Hooch.
Oh, Tom Hanks. Is it my turn?
I have Tango and Cash.
Okay.
Yes.
Can you say it like Jack Palance says it?
Tango. And Cash. By the way, that was not me vamping. That was literally, well, that was me vamping. That wasn't me trying to be funny. That was me like pulling up the most dustiest Dewey Decimal System card in my brain. Like, that's, yes. Because I believe you've asked me on a show to say it before.
I might have. Now I'm going to have you say it while you do one-handed push-ups.
Tango. Cash. It is literally.
Now say, and the winner is Marissa Tomei.
Oh, R.I.P.
I have Oscar fever.
And Ayatollah Khomeini.
My next pick is a movie that I put on here because I really like it, but I have to admit, I need to see it. I put it on here because I was contractually obligated. I really like it, but I need to see it again. It's the one on this list that I've seen the fewest amount of times, and the one that I think I saw the longest ago, and that is Jim Jarmusch's Mystery Train, which I think I blind bought on a DVD when it first came out, so like early 2000s.
Tabled.
It's higher for you?
I'm just kidding.
Oh. it's sort
of... Like, this whole time I'm like, I feel like I'm now in my car just listening to the show because I'm like, never heard of this movie before.
It's like an anthology of, you know, one night, a bunch of different characters. doing stuff, an Asian couple that's trying to get to Graceland, and Joe Strummer from The Clash and Steve Buscemi are in a segment. And I remember really loving it, and I think I saw it one more time, but I don't know that I've seen it since then. I know Criterion has a Blu-ray. I do not own said Blu-ray, but I'm definitely due for a revisit, because I at the time, I was like, well, this seems to be one of my favorite Jim Jarmusch movies. So I would need to see it again, but I'm a big fan of it.
What else has Jim Jarmusch done?
I mean, what hasn't he? Stranger than Paradise.
Stranger than Paradise.
Mystery Train.
Did he Ghost Dog?
Ghost Dog, Way of the Samurai. Okay. Night on Earth. Yeah. That vampire one from like 2 years ago, the title of which I can't remember right now.
Yes.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. It's the one with Kirsten Dunst. She's a kid. I got it.
I can't believe I can't. Only Lovers Left Alive.
Yeah. And then one of them is Kirsten Dunst.
Coffee and Cigarettes.
I've seen that too.
Broken Flowers.
I'm like a Jarmusch head.
Yeah. Dead Man coming out on Criterion Blu-ray, the Johnny Depp Western. Mm. The something of, oh, damn it. There's one with a hard to remember title. And I can't.
So far,
remember.
Every title you've named, I will not remember it in 5 minutes.
I can't remember that. The something of. Oh my gosh, this is very upsetting. I'm going to look it up now because I can't live like this.
I'm sorry.
But he makes some great movies, you know, like in every movie that he has that comes out, I get The Limits of Control.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was on the tip of my tongue also.
Oh, and Down by Law. Okay, so we named almost all of them.
In addition, we have done that. I feel like Wayne Gretzky's brother. Collectively, we've scored 5,000 goals in the NHL. By the way, did you just feel that?
What was it?
It was an earthquake in San Francisco in 1989.
Oh, no.
Listen, do you know, okay, it's my number 7?
I guess.
Do you know what's better than...
I have not been paying attention. Yeah, it's your
number.
You
know what's better than two fugitives?
Just the one fugitive, Harrison Ford? I didn't kill my wife.
Just the one. And that's 1989's The Fugitive.
Yeah.
I don't care. Three fugitives.
Oh, yes.
No, my number 7 is Major League, because I don't care what people think about me.
No, I love that. I love Major League.
Yeah, it's so great and dumb and awesome and fun. And I wish movies like that were kind of made still, but they never will.
Have you seen The Replacements? It tries. It fails. But it definitely is using the Major League playbook.
I tweeted out the other day, like 2 weeks ago, about The Replacements. I think you whatever, that Gene Hackman is a gift, right? Gene Hackman is in The Replacements. The Replacements has a lot going for it. The Replacements is Keanu Reeves, who's great. It's football. Sports movies are fun.
Yeah.
Gene Hackman. You got a good supporting cast of people. John Favreau is in it.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting movie. And I was watching it's shot so terribly.
Yeah.
It's such a terrible looking movie.
Yeah.
The pacing of it is awful. There's scenes where like they're losing to like the barking football players from the other team. And then it cuts to the strippers who are also cheerleaders. And I'm like, What
filmed
person?
On a different day, just in front of a wall with different lighting.
It was like whenever they'd be like in Saved by the Bell that they'd have like a school assembly, and it's like really the school consists of like 13 kids aside from the main 6. Like this isn't a gym. This is where you're graduating. It's like smaller than my grade school stage.
Yeah.
So it's The Replacements is a movie that I will still watch when it's on. But it's also all kinds of bad. And Major League isn't. Major League is actually really fun and pretty dated and pretty there's things about it that are very offensive and stupid, but also, you know, if you just kind of take it with a grain of salt, I think it can still be fun in 2018, although nothing's really fun this year, let's be honest.
I take everything with a grain of salt, which is why I have crazy high blood pressure. I mean, it is dangerous.
It is. You know what? It's really changed your blood pressure, because it used to be lower.
Sometimes I think about the way my blood pressure used to be.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, what was that guy thinking?
I mean. That's great. I don't even continue. That's who was What was in his brain?
What Milli Vanilli song was he taping off Z95?
Like, I'm too cool for B96. I'm going one number lower to Z95.
Oh, yeah. It was my cracked. I'm like, everyone else listens to B96 is mad. I'm going Z95, Z90. I won $50 from Z95 once.
How? I'm genuinely curious.
I was like home on a Friday night. All my siblings were out.
Time out.
Hard to believe, right?
No surprise here, right, audience?
Easy.
Tweet me at Omar Speck if you agree with that joke ripping on Patrick. Thank you.
I was home. Okay, so here's shit. I was home by myself on a Friday night. All of my siblings were out. I was in my room literally reading a novelization of the television show Charles in Charge.
Come on.
This is a true story.
Come on.
I had Z95 on in my bedroom, and it was like, you know, the ninth caller call in. So I went out to the kitchen because we had one phone in our house and dialed and got through, and you could hear me say, like, what's, you know, the number one station for giving away money? And it's like 12-year-old me going, Z95? Like, I couldn't believe what was happening. And then they play it back after a commercial break, and you just hear this kid go, Z95? But I took that $50 with me to Survivor Series when I went that Thanksgiving. That's because so it was funny. In Chicago, and I bought a Rowdy Roddy Piper t-shirt and a couple other things.
How did you get the money?
They sent a check.
That's so strange. Like, yes, child, here's a check for $50 for questioning what the number one station is for giving money. Like, I think, is this what you want me to say? Is that part, like, of the recording?
Are you happy, you sons of bitches?
Right. Oh, but I do miss Patrick from back then. He was such an innocent little boy. He just was so cute. You know, no beard, wife, no kids, no responsibility. It just was like a different time.
Just so many Charles in Charge books, you know? And like, who knows? He was time to call radio stations.
Right. That's like, what's a radio station?
Right? Just nothing but big dreams.
Right.
Bigger ears.
Right. The better to hear the radio with.
Did you do your seven? Was your seven Major League? Once in a while, I remember, we're doing a list.
No, by the way, no one cares about our list.
My number seven is When Harry Met Sally.
That is actually a little, just one, two higher than my list.
All right.
I spoiled it.
We'll come back to it. We'll come back to it, because I'm starting to think our top fives are going to be vastly different.
Oh, really?
It's looking that way.
I have more Jim Jarmusches on my list. you know what? I love movies that kind of flip the concepts and like the things that we understand as being true. And they say the devil, that's not a he, that's a she.
She devil.
Number six, she devil. Roseanne Barr, Meryl Streep, Ed Begley Jr., Linda Hunt. Need I go on? Because I can't.
You love her on TV. You love her supporting Donald Trump. You'll love her in She Devil.
Remember the national anthem? my number six is Glory.
That's interesting. Serious. I watched it in school once.
That's why my number five is Schindler's List.
But I also watched a movie in school about how to wash my privates. Is that your number four, babe?
Zinc. Dumb Simpsons joke. Yeah, Glory is number six, and there's not a lot of world. let me rephrase that. There's not a lot of Civil War movies except for
Civil War. Oh, Ghost Brigade.
That's right, Corbin Burnson's Ghost Brigade, which did not come out in 1989. But there's really not. Honestly, there's not a lot of Civil War movies, and if there are, oftentimes they take the approach of like a Lincoln biopic. I'm sorry, biopic, or they will they'll just be kind of a weird glamorization of the war. And I think Glory does a good job of showing actual battle and the violence and the carnage and the historical. I think the history has been It's one of it's a movie that kind of weirdly gets a pass in my reading from historians because it's not super accurate, but it kind of captures a mood or a zeitgeist about Civil War in such a way that it kind of gets a pass for it, if that makes sense. That was a terrible phrasing that I just used, but my point is there's a lot of historical inaccuracies. Supposedly no slaves actually fought in this specific regiment in the Union Army. But there's other things that they do so well in showing the society and even in the North, the prejudices that existed back then. But it's just a really amazing historical drama and also really sad. And Matthew Broderick doing a really great performance in a very understated way, I think. Yeah, it's really great.
And it won, didn't it win Denzel his first Oscar?
Yeah, it sure did.
For supporting actor. Again, I haven't seen it in years and years. I watched it in school once, and I don't know if I've seen it since then. I know I love the music because it shows up in everything. It showed up in like so many trailers for a long time. And I know you love war films, so it doesn't surprise me. Have you seen, what were those two gigantic, Gettysburg and what was the other one? Gods and Monsters, Kings and Assholes.
I have not.
What, do you know what I'm talking about?
I do know, but I thought
Jeff
those were
Daniels
more like,
and...
Oh, no, I haven't seen them.
So they're Civil War movies. I haven't seen them either, but...
Is that like Flags of Our Fathers and Letters from Iwo Jima?
I don't think... No, I think one is literally like a sequel to the other, although okay. I don't know what the sequel is to Gettysburg, but yeah.
Well, there's certain things too. The Civil War is such a studied... conflict, and there's the Ken Burns approach.
You mean a reenacted conflict?
Well, yes, to this day, the War of Northern Aggression. And there's so much to learn that if you really wanted to devote your like movie watching days to Civil War, I'm sure there's tons of documentaries to watch. And I know you do. But for me, Glory, it's all I need. Done. Civil War, put a cap on it.
My favorite scene in Glory, I want to say, and maybe I'm remembering this wrong, but if after the credits, I remember Matthew Broderick walks out like over a field of slaughtered soldiers.
Yes.
And he looks at the camera and he says, "You're still here? It's over.
Right.
Go home."
How prescient was he though, talking about like these racist ideas that we still hold, like we're still here, you're still living in this flawed past.
Yeah.
I mean, I miss him.
Yeah.
What happened?
I do love in Glory
that one of the soldiers who used to work with Matthew Broderick's character is now the captain in Brooklyn Nine-Nine. That's what I love about Glory.
And arguably the funniest character on that show.
That show, by the way, can we just make a Brooklyn
Nine-Nine? Has it come back? Where did it go?
I don't know. But
my DVR hasn't recorded it in months, and it was like the only thing getting me through the days for a while.
It's such
was going back
show.
And watching that entire show.
And it's so funny. It's so whatever. Brooklyn Nine-Nine is great. I can't even like
Glory.
It's a diverse cast, like strong female characters.
No.
Like it's
amazing.
Just wonderful. It's just amazing.
It makes me happy. It makes me feel good about the world.
Right.
When so little does. Let's face it.
You're still here?
Yeah.
Go.
Yeah, yeah.
This happened 100 years ago.
Yes,
probably
exactly.
More.
Get
Who
over it.
Who can do the math? Who can do the
we
math?
We elected Obama. Get over it.
Jim Crow's dead. He's in the field somewhere. Terrible. Terrible thing.
For those of you listening who are not familiar with the politics of Doug and myself, we're making fun of racist assholes right now, not actually expressing those views. I feel like I need to make that clear in case anyone thinks I'm actually saying racism ended when Obama was elected. That is not the case.
Don't you understand, audience, that Doug's a cuck and Patrick is a snowflake?
My number six is the first film from somebody who would go on to have a huge career and a very important career, and that is Mr. Steven Soderbergh, and that is his first film, Sex, Lies, and Videotape.
Which that's a great movie.
It is, and I can sort of imagine roughly, 11-year-old Doug maybe renting it from the library and being very disappointed.
Right. Naked Lunch, same reaction.
because this is people sitting around confessing to each other, and James Spader can't get it up. Andie MacDowell is in this movie, so what are we doing with that? But she's right. Really good. Everybody's really good. This was a movie that created a movement. I mean, this is the movie that sort of created the whole Sundance indie boom of the 1990s, I would say. Even though there were other movies of this year that were working in a similar area, whether it's Mystery Train or Drugstore Cowboy. I mean, this wasn't the only sort of studio indie to come out in 89, but this one got all kinds of attention and announced a new filmmaker, features four great performances. Laura San Giacomo, who's an actress who I just love in everything, including Just Shoot Me. I just think she's terrific all the time and crazy hot, and she's so good in this movie. Everybody's so good in this movie. It's like Spader being weird but also sympathetic, which he's so rarely able to be. He's usually just a creep, and in this your heart kind of goes out to him because he's playing a very sweet, sensitive guy, even though he's kind of a fucked up, like, manipulator. I'm a big fan of the movie.
Yeah, it's been a long time since I've seen it, but I remember thinking it was pretty amazing. And it's not on my list because of that, because I'm not familiar with it. And I'm the worst. But you guys know that already. I'm owning it. 2018 Doug owns his awfulness.
Are we up to the top five?
Top five. It's happening right now.
This is where things get real and the point values double.
That's right. Can you top this movie? Can you top... the movie I'm about to mention?
I'm king, and they know it. When I snap my fingers, everybody comes to show top that.
I've never seen Teen Witch.
You're okay.
But I've seen that scene like dozens of times. It's such
a funny... because you're way into gangster rap.
Well, yeah. I'm pretty street. It's very, very funny, and Teen Witch is not my five. My number five is When Harry Met Sally.
Oh, okay.
A great romantic comedy. Seems timeless. Doesn't feel like a movie from 1989 in so many ways, not counting the fashion and, you know, whatever else that makes it, you know, of the moment, but just a great romantic comedy and kind of set the template for the next 30 years, right? I mean,
yeah, in a lot of ways. And again, part of that amazing streak that Rob Reiner was on, helped sort of launch Nora Ephron, even though she had been a very successful writer and had written a handful of screenplays. I feel like this is the movie that sort of codified what the Nora Ephron movie would be for the next 15 years or so. I love it. Yeah. I mean, I like romantic comedies when they're done well. And in terms of the last 50 years, I don't think there are many that are done better than When Harry Met Sally. I know plenty of people will disagree with me right now and are pulling their hair out, but, I think it's a great movie about two people who become best friends before falling in love. And we rarely see that. They're not tricking each other or lying to each other. And both performances are, I think, incredibly appealing and feel like real people, not like annoying movie people. I love it.
Yeah. I think Meg Ryan's never been better. She's really, really great in that movie. And I'm not a huge Billy Crystal fan, and he's pretty great in this movie. Also, doesn't play up the kind of the shtick, you know?
Right.
He does a little, but
he's not doing Miracle Max, you mean?
No, he's, yeah. I think everything you said about it, hold on, I'm gonna try and shoehorn this joke in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'll say what you're saying about it. I'll have what you're thinking about When Harry Met Sally also. What you were saying in addition to is what I want for the meal that's also an orgasm.
I feel like you nailed it.
Thank you. Your number five, sir.
My number five is Working Girl.
Working Girl came out in 80... No.
Yeah?
Working Girl with... I love that movie.
Melanie Griffith and Harrison Ford and Sigourney Weaver.
I got it as 88, bro.
Bruh.
I'm looking up IMDb 88, Wikipedia 88.
Shit. Really?
I mean, I was looking on lists and making my list. You know, you do my research. I do my search, my apostrophe search, and But I love Working Girl.
Yeah, I do too. But yeah, it looks like it came out like in the last 10 days of 88.
Should we talk about Working Girl though?
I mean, I'm going to have to leave it on here.
Yeah. I mean, it's done. It's
so maybe if you saw it in like the first week of 89, maybe it feels like a 1989 movie. I'm panicking a little bit because there's an article that's coming out this week that also mentions Working Girl from me.
Uh-oh. And, and then what's going to happen?
I mean, the whole site shuts down, right? Don't we lose our license? It's just been revoked.
That's a pretty kick-ass Danny Glover. I don't care what anyone says.
Yeah, listen. Do you think I'm going to argue with you? Because I'm not.
Glover gonna glove. do you have another? Do you have an alternate? Can I suggest some alternates?
Yeah, please.
Christmas Vacation. Not the best. Weekend at Bernie's. No one saw it. It just talked about.
I saw it theatrically. Twice.
People saw it. No. Let me rephrase. People definitely saw Weekend at Bernie's, but people talk about it 2018 as if everyone watches it every third night, and it's just it's a joke from Friends. At this point. Like no one.
A pretty good joke from Friends, though.
It is a great joke from Friends, but it's also like not a great movie. So that's the joke in Friends. But now we're talking about it as if like, oh, we all nudge, nudge, wink, wink, Weekend at Bernie's. Casualties of War, sexiest Vietnam movie.
I mean, that was on my list, honestly. I think while we were talking, I swapped it out for Working Girl. God damn it!
Casualties of War. Or here's a mistake I almost made, but I'm not like you because I pick movies from 1989 as the assignment suggests. Because Bloodsport came out in 88, 30 years ago, and Kickboxer came out in 89, and Bloodsport's better than Kickboxer, so I'm not talking about it, even though Mike Pomero wants to hear me talk about.
I see what you're doing. Guess what? Cyborg came out in 1989, and it's better than both of them.
What about American Ninja 3? Blood Hunt. Is that better than
anything? I'll throw Casualties of War in here, even though I think it would be lower on my list. But since I shouldn't talk about Working Girl, I'll say Casualties of War. Obviously, I'm a giant Brian De Palma fan. This isn't the usual Brian De Palma movie. This is the movie that Brian De Palma gets to make when The Untouchables makes a lot of money and the studio says, okay, what do you want to make next? I want to make my Vietnam rape movie. And he did. And there's still a lot of him in it in terms of some of the showy camera work. There's that amazing sequence where Michael J. Fox is kind of stuck in a hole and the camera moves underground and you see this whole series of tunnels with the Viet Cong approaching the lower half of his body and he doesn't know. And it's terrifying. The movie is like a fucking... like if you ever had a horrible, horrible wound and you put a Band-Aid on it and then somebody, I don't know why they would do this. They come over and they rip the Band-Aid off and just expose all of the blood and pus and like it's infected and all this. That's Casualties of War because it is really hard to watch. It is really sort of an emotionally shattering experience and not one that I care to relive. But a very powerful movie. And I know there's a lot of like crazy stories about the making of it and how Sean Penn just bullied the shit out of Michael J. Fox. Cause you know, he's method and Michael J. Fox was a TV actor.
Yeah, he wasn't Spicoli.
Right. And I know Sean Penn, you know, got most of the acclaim for it and is probably still very good. But my memory of the last time I watched it was like, oh, this is Sean Penn doing Sean Penn. Like, is that my daughter in there? You know, like, here's your Oscar. And Michael J. Fox doing a much quieter, sort of more reserved performance. John C. Reilly is actually the one who I think stands out. And this might have been his first movie as, like, the number two, the guy who just goes along with it because he's a fucking follower. it's really hard to watch and really good.
Yeah, I've talked about this movie before on a podcast, I think, because I used to go through in the summer, I'd spend time with a friend of mine who used to live next door and moved away, and our parents would still be friends and talk. And I would occasionally, during the summer, go spend the night at his house, and we would go to whatever the local video store was and just buy every and any war movie we could, or rent, any war movie we can rent.
Yeah.
And his older brother would rent them for us because they were all rated R. And so we got, you know, Platoon and Hamburger Hill and just like the like B movies you never heard of. And I remember watching Casualties of War and being like, this isn't what I want to watch at all. again, the mindset of like a 13-year-old boy just like wants to watch carnage and war and like have fun and pretend to shoot and jump on sofas and maybe go through his older sister's underwear drawer. I mean, I don't want to, casualties of war. I don't want.
So that's why my number five is Working Girl.
Right. Do you ever wonder why Paulina Porizkova didn't have a bigger career?
I mean, I know she has an alibi.
That's right. With a bullet. Number four. we had a friend in high school. This is the, I'll say this in such a way that's, we'll call him Ken. He was a really, really nice guy in high school who loved movies, who was a huge movie fan, movie collector. And it's kind of a surprising, actually, that this movie fan, movie collector, we weren't actually closer friends with, because like this is a very, you know, a shared thing that we all love.
Yeah.
But we just weren't as close to him as, you know, whatever else. And anyway, so fast forward, he's now the only person I know from high school that's actually kind of in the industry.
Yeah, big time.
This is like a sound producer or engineer for Skywalker Ranch. Is that what he does?
Yeah.
So, but anyway, about this guy, Ken.
But, you know, we got this podcast. So, like, we're also living the dream?
Fuck you, Ken. Just kidding. Please invite me up to Skywalker. Just like Margo.
Show me where you mixed Attack of the Clones.
But for the longest time, he would make top 10 lists and we'd talk about movies and stuff. And we were at his house for some reason, and he owned on Laserdisc Her Alibi. And I was such an asshole. I could not let that go. Probably up until 2018 did I bring it up. And in order to make him just feel bad about his love of movies, like, I'm such a dickhead that I'm just like, yeah, Her Alibi, oh yeah, you're a big movie fan.
He had interesting taste. I remember being like, Ken, you're the other person that loves movies as much as I do, and you want to come like shop for Laserdiscs with me, and that's awesome. Like, we ditched school one day to go buy Laserdiscs, and but we had such different taste. And I remember being, but I will say, he was obsessed with John Carpenter. I think before a lot of people. Do you know what I mean? Like, there were many of us who grew up loving John Carpenter movies, but Ken kind of got that, like, oh, this guy made all these movies and I'm a fan of his work, not just Escape from New York and Big Trouble in Little China or whatever. Like, he was in on the whole body of work, and I think he was a little bit ahead of his time in that way.
Yeah, no, I mean, all my jokes aside, I do have a lot of respect for him, because he has, like, he's living the dream. He's working in the movies right now, and I was just such an asshole, and still am, for bringing up Her Alibi as, like, my go-to. You know, like, but when you're a kid, you have, like, the go-to joke.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that one guy with the unibrow, like, oh, that's the guy with the unibrow. That's the joke I'll make time and time again.
Right.
Ken was like, Her Alibi, and I don't think he even liked it all that much. It was just part of his collection, and I guarantee you look at anyone's collection, and there's going to be pimples all over it, you know?
Not mine. Mine's pretty bulletproof.
So Her Alibi, number four.
Okay, good.
Number four, Lethal Weapon 2.
Nice.
I know Lethal Weapon is a better movie, but this isn't the top 10 Lethal Weapon movies podcast. This is the top 10 of 1989. And surprise though it may be, Lethal Weapon did not come out in 1989. Lethal Weapon 2 did, because they fool you on the top 10. Lethal Weapon 2 is actually, I was way more familiar with it than Lethal Weapon. So for the longest time, it was my Lethal Weapon. It was my favorite Lethal Weapon, only because I had not seen the first one. The first one is very, very good and very dark and very interesting and thoughtful. And Lethal Weapon 2 is flashy and like more, it's glossy. It's Hollywood.
Yeah.
And it's still, I still think it's good. I'm not saying it's not good, because it's obviously number four on my list. That's right. but Lethal Weapon is great. It's not a comparison between the two. I don't know why you keep bringing it up, Patrick. but Lethal Weapon 2 is great, and I do love how a shipping container falls on all of my dreams every day.
I talked about this a little bit, I think, on the Netflix recommendation, the streaming recommendations column from last week, that Lethal Weapon 2 is the one that I've seen the most, because for some reason it must have been like early 1990, because the movie came out summer 89, so by early 90 it's like on VHS and showing up on pay-per-view basically. And I was home a lot because it was winter and I'm stuck inside. And for some reason, only
calling radio stations,
only reading Charles in Charge, only this only happened with Lethal Weapon, but it was constantly like mistakenly showing up for free on our pay-per-view channel. It didn't happen with other movies. It wasn't like I had free access to all pay-per-view movies in early 1990, but for some reason, Lethal Weapon 2 kept coming on, and it got to a point where I just started checking for Lethal Weapon 2. Like, let me turn the TV on and see if I'm illegally getting Lethal Weapon 2 by accident. And if I was, I had to watch it, not just because I liked the movie, but because I felt like I was losing money if I didn't. It was this miracle that I was getting it, and how could I just give that up? So I would watch it every single time it showed up. So I've seen it a lot. It's like a movie I pretty much know by heart. So I'm a fan as well.
Yes.
That's why it's my number four. My four is a movie called Miracle Mile.
Mm.
Have you seen this movie?
John Coffey? That one. Yeah, I've seen it.
That's correct.
1998.
Like the drink.
Miracle Mile.
You would like Miracle Mile quite a bit because you're a big fan of a little movie called Seeking a Friend for the End of the World. Now, this is a very similar movie, only not a comedy.
Go on.
And not especially romantic. It's much more...
Not very good. You'd love it, Doug.
Also, entirely different premise, and not my number four. So, it's... Anthony Edwards plays a young man who meets Mayor Winningham in a haircut that does her very little favors. And they sort of schedule a date for later that night. They're going to meet up again. And while he's waiting for their date, he answers a payphone. He happens to be walking by a payphone, picks up a payphone. And there's a guy on the other end who says, "It's happened. I'm sorry. We launched the missiles. They'll be there in 50 minutes. And then the phone disconnects. And so he has to figure out, are they about to be bombed? Is nuclear war coming? And he is running around trying to warn people. And there's a question of, is this even real? Is this a hoax? Could that person have been mistaken? And society breaks down very, very quickly. It is a dark movie. And it is willing to put its money where its mouth is in many ways. It's done in such a fascinating visual style where it looks like the future, but it's not. But everything is very colorful and the costuming is like not exactly what people were wearing in 1989. So it's very stylized. Every actor that they encounter is somebody you know, whether it's Kurt Fuller from No Holds Barred or
my number two,
Michael T. Williamson, a.k.a. Bubba from Forrest Gump. Or Brian Thompson from Cobra, or whoever, you know. Eddie Bunker shows up from Reservoir Dogs, you know. Everybody is somebody, and it's like under 90 minutes. It is such a terrific underseen movie. And I know, I don't think you listen, but Pure Cinema, Elric and Brian are talking about it a lot on that show and trying to get attention because I think Kino maybe just put it out on Blu-ray. And if you haven't seen it, I highly, highly recommend it.
I feel like in your description of it, I went online and I'm looking at it. I feel like I watched it with you. Is it possible?
No.
I think I watched it with you. I think you showed it to me. No? Okay. All right, well, I want to see it now because everything you described seems like something I would respond to.
Yeah.
I like when you set things up. Like, you'd like this movie. It's terrible.
It's super good.
Yeah. Okay. I have to check that. I'm putting that on my list.
Please do. You can rent it on Amazon for like $3.
That's why it's my number three. No, I really do want to see it now. That's great. That's the point of this, right? Like to open.
Yeah.
to change each other's opinions about movies like Lethal Weapon 2. Gotcha. My number three stars Tony Danza.
And is anybody out of control in this movie?
She might be.
Okay, all right.
She might
Amy be. Dolans. Amy Dolans.
I've never seen She's Out of Control. That's why it's not my number one, and that's why it's my number three.
I saw it as a double feature on a school night at the second run Elk Grove Theater with Spaced Invaders, and it was a hell of a night. No, I take that back. I apologize. I saw it as a double feature with... Oh, shit. Could I be remembering things wrong? Now I want to say I saw it as a double feature with The Dream Team, starring Michael Keaton.
Another movie that came out. He was in Batman this year, and he was also in The Dream Team.
Yeah, that's an 89 movie. So, yeah, that was my double feature. The Spaced Invaders was with Ernest Goes to Jail, I think.
Yeah, hello.
Yeah, I don't know what I was thinking, guys. I apologize, and my apology is sincere.
This had to be peak Who's the Boss, Tony Danza, right?
Yeah. 89? This was the move where, like, Roseanne Barr gets She-Devil and Tony Danza gets She's Out of Control and John Larroquette and Bronson Pinchot get Second Sight.
Oh, my gosh.
We were just plucking them from TV, from our favorite sitcoms, and throwing them in movies. Casualties of War, Michael J. Fox. They're like, I like that Family Ties kid. What would it be like in Vietnam?
He's all buttoned up. Let's see him come unraveled.
He got addicted to speed in Vietnam.
My number
He had two dates for the same Vietnam.
His briefcase holds grapes. My number three is Say Anything. That might be higher on yours.
Tabled.
Okay.
My number three, I felt weird about putting it on. I did, because it's a Woody Allen movie. And we're in a weird place with Woody Allen, you know, because part of me is like, I might never watch another Woody Allen movie. I don't know. But part of me is like, well, that stuff in the past from when I didn't know these things, I can't hold myself accountable for responding to and loving one of his films that I saw years ago when I didn't know this stuff was happening. Will I continue to see and support his current output? No. Would I ever put a Woody Allen movie on my 10 best list of a current year? No. But my number three is Crimes and Misdemeanors, which I think is maybe his best movie ever.
Mm.
That's a tough one because I mean, I do like Annie Hall, you know, but Crimes and Misdemeanors is an amazing movie that's sort of broken up into two separate stories. Martin Landau is a guy who's having an affair and realizes it will be easier to murder his mistress than be found out, at the same time that Woody Allen is trying to romance a woman and sort of steal her away from somebody that she might be seeing. And so his story is obviously very light and the other story is very dark, but it is amazingly frank in the way that it deals with some of these moral questions, and it is fascinating. It is such a good movie, and I hate that I have to put it at number three because its filmmaker, you know, is maybe a monster. So there's that. But it is my number three.
I don't think I've ever seen it.
It's super good, but it's hard to recommend now, you know, because
is it right of me to, like, my ignorance of Woody Allen? I've only seen, like, maybe 10 Woody Allen films.
Okay.
So in 2018, that makes me a hero because he's a monster. And I avoided those even before I knew, except for Annie Hall, because that's great.
Right. Yeah. No, and you're a hero.
Midnight in Paris. I mean, we have to forgive him for that one because it's perfect. And a couple others. Manhattan's pretty all right. But the rest of them, terrible, terrible.
Yeah.
No, I've never seen it, and I even own a like pretty comprehensive Woody Allen box set that I've just like I always pull and then push back in. Probably because my moral compass tells me to do so and not because Major League is on TV. It's all about moral compass with me.
Yeah, listen, you have some moral compass.
That's correct. I always like to include a Christmas movie on my lists.
Yeah.
And Prancer, it gets a lot of flack because he's not one of the top, like, you know, Dasher and Dancer and Prancer, like he's number three, and that's why he's number three. No, I'm sorry, number two. Damn it!
Do you want to hear my Prancer impression?
Yeah, please.
Prancer's in the shed near my house. I haven't seen it, but I saw the trailer a lot of times in 1989.
Yeah.
And so I still remember Prancer's in the shed near my house.
Do you want to hear my Jack Palance talk
about Prancer? Yeah. Ooh, how would Jack Palance talk about Prancer?
Prancer?
And Cash. Prancer and Cash.
I said Prancer and Claws, but you...
Do you know what I'm so excited about? Is when we watch Tango and Cash and there's all those scenes where they're on the front page of like the Los Angeles newspaper. Cash makes another bust. The way you always see cops making the front page of papers.
I live in Los Angeles now. And granted, the print industry has changed a lot since 1989. I miss it so much the way it used to be. But they still... In the blotter, we'll talk about the specific arresting officer and how he's going after big crime syndicates.
But this wasn't even the blotter. This was literally the front page. Literally the front page. I almost forgot myself for a minute there. But literally.
So it's not – Prancer is not my number three or my number two. My number two is Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Oh, nice.
Great movie that's filmed – in Arizona, but takes place in San Dimas, California, which is right next door to where I now live. So it's always fun to pass by San Dimas High School, and I never don't talk about their football as I'm driving past. And we live really close to a place called Raging Waters, which was the inspiration for Waterloo. My point is where I chose to live, and by choose, I mean where my wife dragged me to because she was born nearby, is all because of Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. It's a really fun movie that I think is really smart too. I know that's kind of it's well, I think you mentioned earlier about Earth Girls Are Easy and what was the other one?
I think it was Bill and Ted.
Bill and Ted? Yeah. How it's about LA culture, but it's really smart about dumb people, and it's really great.
It is. It's so much fun. And I know, you know, a lot of people prefer the sequel, and in many ways I think the sequel is a better, smarter, more ambitious, weirder movie, but that shouldn't take anything away from the original, which is
wait,
like
people prefer the sequel.
I know, isn't that crazy? Because I remember
oh my gosh, well that's the whole history is that it's right. It's F This Movie Fest 2
is that's where we know what we're doing came from, right?
Exactly.
Yeah,
that Patrick programs F This Movie Fest. Was it the second F This Movie
Fest? Yeah, it sure was.
And he puts Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey on there because it's 1991.
One.
And people are like, I love this lineup, except I'm not so sure about blah, blah, blah. And it's like, dude, just trust us. You're a fan of the site. You listen to the podcast, all 30 of the shows that we put out because we're such a new podcast. And Doug's on most of them. That's where I come from. This is the past. And it turns out it was like gangbusters. It was the most popular, fun to watch in a group setting movie, maybe in any F This Movie Fest so far. It
Whoa,
really was like
bold.
Not saying like in terms of the
station,
the expectations and the reception. Was
yeah,
so,
I would agree with that.
So amazing. And I still argue it's definitely weirder. It's definitely out there. I don't respond to it as much as I do the first one still, because the first one, again, just the. You can say now that the second one is more inventive, but even the first one, I think it's pretty insanely inventive in terms of just like time machine, that they're gods in the future, basically. And, you know, just they have to go back for this history. It's very bizarre. It's a very bizarre movie.
And it's like so stupid, but like in the best way.
Yes. And it shouldn't work, but it does. And their stupidity begat so many imitators that were all paled in comparison, even to a much lesser extent was like kind of Wayne's World, right? And you know, just that they're basically aping elements from Bill and Ted. And it just speaks again to how Keanu Reeves is the best.
Yes.
And he's made the best comedies and the best action movies, and he's just the best.
Yeah.
And Alex Winter is pretty great too. And The Replacements is pretty great.
Let us never forget. I love that movie, and I'm happy to see it represented here. My number two is a movie that has already come up, and that is Say Anything.
Yes.
which I like better than you, I guess, but only a little.
Just a little.
Yeah, it's like a little bit better than you. But yeah, I think it's, you know, we talked about When Harry Met Sally and how it's this great romantic comedy. And Say Anything is certainly comedic at times, but I wouldn't describe it as a comedy. It's more of a romantic drama. And I think not just one of the best of that year, but maybe ever in terms of what it feels like to be young and in love. I think it's such an original film. I think it's a film that ages well because the older you get, the more you kind of buy into the Diane Court relationship with her dad as much as you do about the, you know, the young people in love. Speaking of which, RIP John Mahoney.
Yeah.
It's this amazing kind of three-way relationship, and John Cusack creates one of my favorite characters ever in a movie, in Lloyd Dobler. He's such an individual, and he's so unlike any other young person we've seen in a movie, while still being 100% believable. He's not this dumb construct of like fucking, he wears a Clash t-shirt, but I always think of like Jesse Bradford in Bring It On, who wears his Clash t-shirt, and I'm like, oh fuck you, that's shorthand for like, I'm a little bit different, I'm cool, these girls are cheerleaders, but I'm alternative, like fuck you movie.
No. In Jesse Bradford's defense, his sister is Eliza Dushku.
True.
And she washes cars in a bikini.
But I just, there's nothing about Lloyd Dobler that feels inauthentic to me. And I think that's what I love about him so much. I mean, the same could be said for Diane Court, but obviously I relate to her so much less than I do Lloyd Dobler. I just think it's... I would say it's still Cameron Crowe's best movie. I love Almost Famous a lot, but I think the size of Say Anything, the fact that it's so small and so specific, allows him to sort of zero in on the things that he does best in a way that Almost Famous, which is a great movie and I'm not taking anything away from, but like if I had to choose between the two, I'm going Say Anything.
It's a movie I came to late. I think I first watched it in maybe around 20 or 21 years old.
Good
really
Lord.
Right. And it was one of those things where I watched it thinking that I had seen it 10 previous times, you know, because it was so in the you know, the teen movie aesthetic and the songs and the iconic boombox over the head.
Right.
It's just been parodied and replayed in so many different ways that I was convinced I had seen it. And when you watch it, it's a revelation because it is all those things. It's a teen movie. It's kickboxing is the sport of the future. It's all these quotes that are sort of like you've heard or heard variations of, and then you realize the heart of the movie. And again, as I like that you talked about a little bit about the father-daughter relationship, because that as you grow older too, and we both have daughters, and it's kind of you realize there as they get older, and that it's a unique relationship and something that when you're a teenager, all you care about is like, just let her go with him. Don't you get it, old man? You don't understand. There's another quote that I use all the time that is not even a great – well, it's a great quote from the movie, but I'm not saying it's one of the best quotes. It's where she's – giving her valedictorian speech and the line she gives and her father, go back. And her father's the only one that laughs. And it's the funniest, but it's perfect though. You know what I mean? It's such a joke that's not very funny. And it describes her character, describes her relationship with her father. It just is so perfect. And their love is pretty great. And she's pretty great too. She's, I know you gave a lot of love to John Cusack's character, but Ione Skye does a really great job, I think, of playing a difficult character that's a little more two-dimensional than his. And she does a really good job of kind of finding the nuances and making her, you know, that character more vulnerable and more confused and trying to figure things out, you know, because she does like this guy, and but she has the future waiting for her. She's such a success, you know, and it's really, really great. And I kick myself. I don't know if it happens for you often because you seem to watch way more movies than I do, but whenever I finally stumble upon a movie that I feel like I should have seen 10 years prior, you know, and it's like, where is this? This is what I have been looking for, you know, this kind of movie, this warm embrace of a movie.
I mean, Ione Skye certainly deserves credit for playing a part that I think has been a stereotype in so many other teen movies and turning it into something that's super human, like you said, and kind of shattering every bit of that stereotype from other movies. So, yeah, she's amazing. I mean, they're so good together. It's so good.
It really is. So great.
Yeah.
So good.
That was my two.
Just miss it.
So we're up to your one then. This is it. The best movie of 1989. Honey, I Shrunk the Who Now?
It's not Honey, I Shrunk the Who Now.
Oh.
You know, it was funny in the 80s, and I guess in the 90s too, the word bad meant good.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I remember
you said,
that.
Like, oh, you're so bad, it means you're so good.
Like, I love the power glove.
Correct. It's so bad.
Is that where you were going?
Yes.
Jenny Lewis, redhead.
Fred Savage's The Wizard is my number one. No, my number one is Heather's. We've done a podcast on it in 2014. Probably my weakest podcast. So don't go back and listen to it. Don't do that. I implore you to not listen to that podcast and listen to me starting now for the next hour talk about Heathers.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I recently re-listened to that Heathers podcast and it was like, it felt a little bit like coming home again. Anyway, sorry, continue.
No, Heathers is great. I love it. It's very David Lynchian in so many ways. It's a teen movie that's not a teen movie. It's satire, it's parody, it's everything. And it shouldn't work, and it does, and it's great.
It is a movie to which I owe a great deal of my sensibility, I guess. And it's like, it's not that I would say that Heathers shaped my sensibility. I would say that it was like waking up in this way when I saw a movie that made so much sense to me in terms of my sensibility. It was kind of how I felt when I saw Better Off Dead the first time, where it was like, you see a movie and you feel like it's this secret thing that somebody made just for you. And Heathers was like that, where I was like, this is so dark, this is so weird, so twisted, so bleak, so kind of fed up with the teen movie of the 1980s that it goes out of its way to just lay waste to the entire genre, and more or less does. I mean, it would come back again with what was wave two, starts with like, She's All That, Can't Hardly Wait, sort of.
Yeah, that's what, 99?
Yeah, 90. Can't Hardly Wait is 98. She's All That, 99. I mean, there's certainly teen movies between those years because Clueless is 95.
Right.
But like, they were a staple of film in the 1980s, and Heathers comes along and kind of, like I said, burns it all down.
In a way, it's like the Unforgiven of teen movies.
Exactly.
We've said all we need to say about this genre for a long time. And obviously, like, Clueless is great. It's one of the best teen movies maybe ever, but it's still not of that same chemistry or the same, you know, the same construction blocks or whatever, you know?
Now, are you going to watch the Heathers TV show that just debuted on the Paramount Network?
If only one had the Paramount Network.
I think I do.
No, I will not be watching the Heathers TV show.
I hear it's like one of the worst things ever.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't doubt that. I don't know why. I mean, I get it. It's a property that they own and they just want to make money on it. And I'm sure there's enough people to watch it. But then if it's not done well, why would you watch it twice? You know, but whatever. I am not paid to make these decisions for major studios as much as I write them letters telling them that I should be paid.
I also have not seen the Heathers musical.
You've seen Heathers Wixen, though, right?
I have, yes. I have.
Heathers Wixen, she's pretty cool. Heathers also is a movie that not only kind of killed a genre, but opened up a new way of, like, how many movies, even Bring It On, as we mentioned, Eliza Dushku's body of work, it kind of tries to reinvent, like, with what's that, Pitch Perfect, that Heathers, that sort of reinvents language, that and all other movies try to copy it, and it seems disingenuous when other movies try to do it, but Heathers, and Christian Slater's great, Winona Ryder's great, I mean, everyone's just really great in it. It's just such a, did Pump Up the Volume come out in 1990, right?
I believe, yeah.
Yeah.
Otherwise, okay, obviously, that's going right to the top,
Bullet, yeah, number one.
And there are, you know, Heathers imitators, because there's, like, Jawbreaker,
yeah,
which is just a ripoff of Heathers, and just a few days ago, I watched Tragedy Girls, which weirdly enough showed up on Hulu, and I thought, well, that's so fast. Cool. Everybody can watch Tragedy Girls now. And then 2 days later was gone from Hulu. So obviously there was some sort of mistake there. But I watched it during those 2 days. So good job me.
It's like your Lethal Weapon of 2018.
Exactly. It doesn't.
Too, sorry.
It doesn't rip off Heathers, but it owes a great deal to Heathers. Well, right, you know, it right, wouldn't right. exist without Heathers. My number one is a movie that you mentioned, I don't know, nine movies ago, and that is Spike Lee's Do the Right Thing, which...
Oh, wait, that's my number 1-0.
Oh, God, okay, yeah, yeah, so we're almost samesies. yeah, I mean, what we did a podcast on Do the Right Thing. You can go back and listen to it. I think it is, you know, not only the best American film of 1989, but one of the best American films of the 80s and of the last 50 years.
Say American film. Is there a better foreign film of 1989?
Yeah, probably.
Oh.
No, I'm just kidding.
Wait, who is the podcast on Do the Right Thing?
JB.
JB, okay.
So, which was awkward because he's very racist. And he was like, I don't get why Mookie broke the window. And I was like, God damn it, JB.
He's like, I owned a pizzeria shop. By the way, quick side note, my wife is the best because she knew that we were recording tonight. Guess what she got me? Guess what she picked up on the way back
from Sal's Pizzeria?
No, Pizza Hut. She brought home Pizza Hut.
OMG.
House has never once housed a Pizza Hut box. And she's like, I know you're recording with Patrick. I know he's your best friend. I know you miss him. I know you miss Chicago. Here's some.
Here's the least Chicago pizza you can eat.
But it speaks to, again, yeah. the fact that when we hang out, we listen, we eat garbage pizza and listen right. to pizza. We listen to pizza.
We watch Ghost Keeper and we eat pizza and we watch Witch Trap and My eat gosh. Pizza Hut.
Anyway, Do the Right Thing.
Do the Right Thing, I just think is one of the best movies ever made. Like, no joke. I just think it's... I don't know. What can I say about it? Like, it's so smart and important and alive and entertaining. You know, it's like one of these few movies that gives you this really difficult but necessary sort of dialogue and messaging, but it does it in the guise of a great, entertaining, super watchable movie. It never feels like... I don't know. You know, it's been almost 30 years. I can't force myself to watch Driving Miss Daisy, right? Even though apparently it would be nice if old Southern ladies were less racist. I think that's the message. I don't know for sure. But like...
I have a hard time driving Miss Daisy because I have two left feet.
It's another
like,
movie.
These are the movies... But yeah. these are the movies that like were award winning in, yeah. I mean, and Glory, and there's a couple others that are sort of like still talked about. But like, who is talking about Driving Miss Daisy? Who is talking about Daniel Day-Lewis's performance? I mean, aside from Daniel Day-Lewis, the guy will not shut up about his characters.
Yeah, I mean, nobody is really talking about Driving Miss Daisy, and Do the Right Thing is, you know, arguably as relevant, if not more relevant than ever. Yes. And it's just a genuine masterpiece. I think Spike Lee has made a handful of other great movies. I love Malcolm X a lot, but I don't think it comes close to touching Do the Right Thing.
You asked me earlier, as I listed it as my number 10, why it was not higher. And I took great offense to that. But
yeah.
I put it behind me because life is not about looking back and remembering uh-huh. nostalgia. It's about going forward and then reminding the people that offended you why they offended you. I honestly think I've only seen it probably three times.
Yeah.
And
you
I
should
saw
watch it again.
Yeah, I know. Right. Well, that's just it. Like, I think it's, and this is going to sound so ignorant of me, but I feel like when I do, it's on my DVD shelf and it's like, I might pull it out and I'm like, this feels like work. And I know it's not.
It's
I know
not
it's not.
Yeah.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, I know it's not. I know it's not work. I know it's fun and it's lively and it's quick and it kind of it's snappy. It goes quickly. But I think because I also know in the back of my head that it says some really it challenges you as a watcher and
yeah.
how you interpret scenes and whatever else that like, do I want to be challenged or do I want to watch literally four episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation back to back and then fall asleep and wake up and like, I can't tell if it's the same episode or a different episode. So I just keep watching and not rewind.
No, it's the one where where Worf has to do something for honor.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And okay. Riker, I thought, was clean shaven, and now he has a beard.
It's the one where it's the one where Data's trying to be more human, right? It was that one.
It's the one where he's acting in Shakespeare on the holodeck. It's great, great show. So
it's the one where Dr. Crusher is walking around in a waking coma, right?
It's the one where Counselor Troy is the model for every girl I would ever fall in love with for the next 30 years. So anyway, my point is, I acknowledge it's probably should be higher on my list, and it's probably one of the best movies of, like you said, of the 90s, of the last century. I just need to kind of sit with it more and watch it more, because even I'll be honest, like the first time I saw it, yet that last scene or whatever, second to last scene, it challenges you. It's like what is like, how do you?
I mean, it does and it doesn't, right? Because Spike Lee's point is always like, no black person has ever asked me, like,
exactly,
did Mookie do the right thing? You know,
right?
Yeah, it's, I don't know.
Well, then it makes you challenge. I mean, it makes me challenge myself, and I'll be the first to admit I grew up with tons of male white privilege, and trying to break from those molds and trying to be a better person and put yourself in other people's shoes. And it's hard, you know, it's not, I don't know. It's something that needs to be done, and we should all be better at it, but it's, you know, there's always the next generation to contend with, you know,
Star Trek, the next generation.
Yes.
Anything else about 1989 movies that you want to say? Did you have any like honorable mentions or anything that you want to bring up?
Just you and me, our honorable mention would be The Little Mermaid, because both of our daughters are obsessed with it.
That's right.
The Killer is a movie that was flirting with my top 10 list.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
It's really, really great. Yeah. Back to the Future 2 is not good.
No.
Back to the Future 3 is better. And Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. I'm surprised you haven't talked. I know it wouldn't be on your top 10 list.
Yeah,
but I'm surprised you haven't talked about it because
I think there will be a piece about it on the site this week.
Okay, cool. Because yeah. Directorial debut of your man.
Joe Johnston is my man.
Yeah, Rocketeer.
He's not my man.
Jurassic Park 3. Your man.
October Sky.
I'm talking about Jumanji, Joe Johnston.
Jumanji,
Joe Johnston. And Captain America, the first Avenger. That's a great move.
Sure, yeah.
Nothing else.
Yeah, I have The Big Picture, the Kevin Bacon movie.
Dead Calm. I'm surprised that's not on your list.
Dead Calm is one of my honorable mentions.
Yeah.
The Adventures of Baron Munchausen, Drugstore Cowboy, and Shag, which is a movie that does not get enough love, and I love a lot.
I probably need to see again.
It's fun. Here's the deal. I feel bad. So you know, hopefully you're going to join us on Saturday, March 3rd, noon Central Standard Time. Please go to fthismovie.com for more information. Yeah.
I'm hoping.
You're coming, right? For more information about F This Movie Fest. But here's the deal. I will have to say something in the episode description that this is coming, because I forgot to mention it at the top of the show. So what I've done now is made our listeners wait almost 2 hours before they get to hear a song by Eric Asperschlager, who is one of our contributors and a very talented writer and musician who in recent years has, you know, written a lot of stuff for these special shows or special events. He wrote an original song for our 400th episode. He wrote a couple songs for Scary Movie Month, going all the way back to the first F This Movie Fest. That was the first one of these like weird, ambitious projects he ever took on, which was this amazing like Ken Burns voiceover thing that he did that opened the show. It was so great. So he wrote a song for F This Movie Fest 7, and I would say it is his best work to date. It is an epic that goes through all of the movies that we will be watching and is very clever, and even features some backup vocals from some of your favorite contributors to F This Movie.
Very cool.
It is. So we're going to end with that, and then we'll play it again maybe, you know, during the fest, and we're recording our live episode immediately following the fest, and then we'll post that next week, so we'll play the song again in the coming days and weeks. But man, Eric is a talent, and I'm excited to debut the song here on this episode. Before we do that, Douglas, it has been a pleasure having you back.
Thank you so, so much. I miss being on the show. I listen to the show. The show is great. You are great. And we named the dog after this movie.
Picked up my phone and scrolled through all the latest tweets. Check in to see what's going on. Notice the hashtag that was blowing up my feed. Gotta say it sounded fun. Watching films from 89 with all my favorite folks online. A Twitter festival with friends around the globe. No fancy evening wear required. T-shirt, fuzzy sweatpants, and a robe. You'll be appropriately attired. Kick back and put up your feet, 'cause all you need to do is tweet. Singing la 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 la. F this movie fest. La 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 la. Feeling hashtag blessed to be part of the best community of lovers of the super screen. Don't change the channel, our first film is UHF. Full of Weird Al gags and songs. Drink from the fire hose, spin the wheel of fish. Then we'll dine on Twinkie dogs. Will George and Stanley save the day? How much polka will he play? We're singing la 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 la. At this movie fest, la 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 la. Feeling hashtag blessed to be part of the best community of lovers of the super screen. And now here's Tango and Cash, two cops who acted rashly, but they got results and found Jack Palance's stash of drugs and guns. Then he finds a way to put them behind bars. Did I mention it stars Kurt Russell and Sly Stallone? Suspect. His wacky neighbors aren't quite what they appear. You just might laugh yourself to death. Don't go into the house alone to dig up Dante's body. Lovers of the super screen. After dinner, Patrick Swayze will appear in the Roadhouse looking buff. He's got no problem if you want to grab a beer, but pick a fight and he'll get tough. Might grab your throat and rip it out like Crow T. Robots hang up. Day turns into night, now Batman's on the prowl in his stiff black rubber suit. It's Michael Keaton hiding underneath the cowl. Prince's soundtrack is a hoot. Joker's got the crazy eyes. Spoiler, in the end he dies. to be part of the best community of lovers of the silver screen.